Actor, comedian Marlon Wayans, we caught up with him earlier this week before his Phoenix, Arizona stand-up live gig. It's a superstar, man. Enjoy it. It's Marlon Wayans of the Freak Nation, the Lucas Oil Studios. He was tired seconds before we cracked his mic. Now, all of a sudden, you found some energy. Marlon Wayans here in the Freak Nation.
For the day, man. In youth, I would just be crazy all the time. You get 46 and you go, I'll wait till like right when they go, and action. And then I like, turn on. Otherwise, I'm asleep.
Otherwise, it's a waste of energy. Let's face it.
I sleep all day. Everybody wants to be all energetic and crazy. I'm like, save it for when you need it. I save it for interviews, stage, and bedroom.
We have. Hey-o. Oh, hey, wait, yeah. Never mind. I'm not going to ask my question there. Okay, so let's talk about that.
Marlon Wayans here in the Freak Nation. Some shows tonight, and then of course Saturday night here in Phoenix. Stand up live.
Two shows every night. Two shows Saturday. Two shows Friday.
Could you do four shows a night?
I've done it. I did five in one day. We started at like 4 in the afternoon. We did a 4, a 6, a 8, a 10, and a 12.
How can you be funny at 4 in the afternoon?
I don't know, but we did it. I did it. I don't know how, but I think the more you do it, the better you get. I try not to say no a lot. I try to go into every lion's den and go, all right, I know it's. I shouldn't perform at 4 o'clock in the morning. I mean 4 o'clock in the afternoon on a Sunday with a church audience here and a bunch of kids. But let me teach these kids some curse words and do this anyway.
You know, hold on though. That's something I've noticed about you that is different than a lot of comedians. Period. I was about to say that we've had on this show, but I'm just going to say in general, you are good about promoting yourself. Like you coming to Phoenix this weekend, you were out there 3 or 4 days ago promoting Stand Up Live. Come see me. I don't see a lot of guys doing that anymore. Why?
Because some guys are comfortable with just, you know, you get your upfront check, and it's just like people's mentality is I get paid to do stand up. My mentality is I get paid. Stand up is the fun part. I get paid to bring audiences in. So my thing is I want to talk to as many people as I can on a weekend because I want to know I have packed shows and I want to make people laugh and feel good. And nothing feels better than a packed house of people laughing instead of like when you got like a 550 seater and there's only like 100 people. It's like you're looking for laughs. 550 people, you hear the laugh.
How difficult
and
is it?
And then you can offend more people.
Yes. Okay, see, that's the thing. But how difficult is it to ride the line? Or do you have to ride the line in this Me Too movement and this racial inequality thing that we have going on in the world that we have had for the last 3 or 4 years? Has it changed comedy? And I hope not.
I think it's changed comedy in terms of how people may feel about comedy. I think it's made people more sensitive, but I don't think it's changed comedians. I think we're just like, we're the last layer of defense. Like, F y'all. Y'all gonna have to get some grow a pair because I can't go around apologizing to everybody. Mm-hmm. Part of humor is you have to dig into different cultures, different nationalities, different sect of people. You have to dig in to dark places to come out with a jewel called a laugh. And that's what we do. And I can't apologize to everybody. So I'm just going to put a blanket statement out there and go, I'm going to offend you. Just know that that's part of my humor. I'm an equal opportunity offender. So at some point, everybody's going to get it. Everybody. I mean, including myself, especially myself. I think that's most important is you got to talk about you. As long as you're doing that, you're an equal opportunity offender. I think you're okay.
Are you yourself on stage?
Absolutely.
Because I think in this room, and talking about promotions, these two have taught me how to really promote. And I mirror what you do with them. And it's a great thing to see because it's an art form. We're ourselves all the time. We take away the swearing when we're on air.
Yeah, same here. You know? I said grow pair. You seen that?
Yeah. That's very family friendly.
I heard three of y'all butts lock up. Like he's going to get our shoe canceled. Damn. I got you.
We actually embrace that here.
Oh, really?
Okay, yeah, we like it.
The thing about it is comedy is, to me, appropriate. Like you have to know when to be what. And I think on stage, you have to look at your audience and go, yeah, I get that. But this is what I'm going to be. Here's how I tell this joke that's going to relate best to this audience. And so
that's when an art form.
Yeah, you have to. It's like when I did my special Wokish, I had a bunch of Trump material and I had a bunch of stuff about race and racism. And I said, okay, so where should I go to get the best laugh that I could? I said, take me to the deep south. And I'm going to do 60 days on a tour going from 60 days in the deep south because I want to know how much Trump stuff could I do. Was it really funny? Because the people that you're making fun of need to laugh the loudest. So, you know, I need to talk about race in an environment where, you know, that it exists and racism. So, I mean, I went to the South and I feel like I found the right amount of stuff to put in.
Were people laughing at your political and racist jokes?
Absolutely. But, you know, at first, you know, I had a long Trump set. And at a point, they can laugh for a certain amount of time till they feel so dumb that they voted for him that they're just like, okay, this isn't funny. Now you're talking about me. So, I mean, but people will laugh for 5 to 10 minutes if you have some really, really funny stuff. I don't think it's offensive. I think you can say anything you want to say. You can talk about any topic you want to talk about. It's how you talk about it. How do you approach it? And I'm not saying you approach it with sensitivity and I'm sorry. You don't pre-apologize, man. You just got to say it and come from a genuine place, and you do approach things with kids' gloves, and you have fun, and that's what I've done my whole career. And, you know, if that offends people, sorry.
Marlon Wayans with the Freaks. When did we jump the shark on that, though, where we had to be so careful with what we say? I say it was Nipplegate, frankly.
Oh, Janet Jackson?
When Janet Jackson, the Super Bowl,
that was one.
Our cojones were cut off on radio. Howard Stern left terrestrial radio and went to Sirius.
I think it started in radio, and now it's starting to go everywhere else. And I think the main culprit, social media. And as much as I'm on social media, I feel like it's given everybody a voice, and it's really a place for the trolls to have voices, and the trolls sit there, and what they do is they promote their agenda. It's not even about a feeling. Though half those people, more than half, aren't even real people. Those are represented by people, they're trolls, to go after an agenda. And so whatever that is, I just think social media has been a detriment to, and plus you keep a log of everything you've said, everything you've tweeted, and every dumb thing you tweeted. And when we first started on social media, we first started doing Twitter, man, we used to just crack jokes. It wasn't about, you know, we was a bunch of kids from the 70s and the 80s that were not sensitive people. This new generation is just crazy. I'm like, I don't understand how you guys even become friends with each other. I mean, everything.
They swipe left.
It's crazy.
Right.
It's crazy to me. I mean, everything's in a phone, and I'm like, put your phone down, live some life. Like, within our culture, like, I grew up in a melting pot. There's black people, white people in New York City, black people, white people, Hispanic people, gay people, transgender people. There was all that in New York City. But me and my friends, all of those, we're not sensitive. Friends to this day, and we're able to speak our mind, crack out jokes, and everybody's fine. It's the social media that makes it. Oh, you can't say that. No, man. You know, when you relate to people, most people don't have that opinion.
But look what happened with Kevin Hart. He gets popped for an old tweet.
Old as hell.
Yeah, a homophobic tweet.
Old as hell that he said to one of my nephews.
Right. So, but now he's off the Oscars. How far back do we have to go?
Listen, man, I just scratched off my bucket list. I was like, if they got him, I ain't going to make it. Because I've been an equal opportunity offender since I started comedy. You know, I'm from Richard Pryor, you know, Eddie Murphy.
I saw you salute him on his birthday.
Yeah, of course, the GOAT. You know, Eddie Murphy, they didn't care. They just was like, yo, his was funny. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and people back in the day, they would sometimes complain, but every comedian looks at that as like, all right, so for the next time I do a special, the next time I around the block, I'm gonna try and do it this way so that I can gain more fans. Those people that I offended, I want them to laugh harder the next time. Now, if you're offended and you stay offended, well, then the only thing to do is to offend you more. Because you ever apologize to somebody and they don't accept your apology and then you want to fight them? That's the way you feel as a comedian. So, but overall, no comedian just wants to go out and offend, but we do want to speak truth. We do want to, our job is to go into these dark caves and come out with an elixir called a laugh. And that's our purpose in this world, you know? That's what we do. And so if you lose some fans along the way, I think it's okay. You're going to gain more by staying truthful and speaking your mind and protecting the First Amendment, which is everybody's right to freedom of speech.
Bottom line, we are a flawed society. We have been for decades, for centuries. If we can't laugh at ourselves, who can we laugh at or what can we laugh at?
Absolutely. Everybody's so sensitive. And the key is for me, if you want a happy life, don't be so sensitive.
Yeah.
I smile. I laugh. People crack Wayne's jokes all the time. I don't sit there. You have to apologize to an entire Wayne's race because we are a race at this point. People crack jokes.
Who is the most annoying audience member? Is it the one that's constantly laughing but with the titter hack kind of laugh? Or is it the one that's just like stone faced?
I love the one that laughs.
Okay.
I hate the guy that comes, sits in the front, and his whole goal is, I ain't gonna laugh. I wish the microphone was a what's the word I can use?
Some squash.
A baseball bat.
A pumpkin.
a brick. It would be the squash emoji.
Yeah, exactly.
The eggplant.
Yeah. And I would just love to just slap that guy across his face where you hear that psh, the skin on skin. And like when it's heavy, like that's what I will. That guy. I don't like that guy. And I don't like the drunk girl that keeps going, woo! Get her out now and take the same eggplant and as she's screaming, throw that in her throat and we're like, oh.
And that'll just Marlon Wayans here in the Freak Nation. Le'Veon Bell, a fan of his or not, you being a Steelers fan?
I am a fan of Le'Veon Bell. I think he's an incredible running back. I like the way he has a slow approach to running. It's like, I'm going to let everything develop and then I'm going to explode. I think he's a monster. I think he he's an asset to the Steelers Nation. But when it comes to his business, I don't think you should let your friend, your boys handle your business. You got to handle your own business. No, or get somebody. He needs a white guy on his team. He needs somebody. Le'Veon, you just can't do this. You can't leave $15 million.
Yeah, that's crazy.
You can't leave $15 million on the table. It's money you're never going to get back. $15 million, like, I'll run for him. And trust me, they won't catch me because I'm really scared of getting tackled by huge men. That's a fear of mine. And I'll score. But $15 million you leave on the table, I'm like, yo, you got to undo those two little cornrows on the side. They're affecting your brain. You can't leave $15 million on the table. You got to, and I get you want a long-term contract and you can't keep giving me this franchise tag and think that's good enough because I'm looking out for the long term of my career because running backs don't have long, long careers. So I get it, but I don't know if this is going to send a resounding message to all the owners to go, we need Le'Veon Bell. I think he's going to draw a line in the sand, and owners are already got their backs up against the wall. They're going to be like, no, they're going to make him an example.
Is there any equivalent in Hollywood?
I hope they don't, but they're going to make him an example.
Well, yeah, that's very possible. Is there any equivalent in Hollywood or with you guys as a family of comedians of holding out for something like that?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But, you know, I mean, some people hold out and, you know, Monique held out. She's like, I want my money. And then she went and was like, all right, well, I'm going to go on tour and tell you why. And I'm it's a tactic. Mm-hmm. You know, I wouldn't have done it, but it's a tactic. But in our industry, you got to make your noise. And my thing is, it's like with a running back, right? Make your noise on the field. Let your play speak for you. My thing is, I'm going to make the best movies I can. I'm going to make the best specials I can. I'm going to make the best everything I can, the best that I can. And then one day, I believe this, money comes. Money comes with excellence. Money comes when, you know, all this work that you do, no matter how long you do it, one day the floodgates open up and you deserve every dollar that you get and then some.
But deserving money versus being happy, finding the mutually exclusive doesn't always happen.
No, it doesn't. But sometimes it does.
Yeah. Oh, without question. Yes.
$15 million to make me freaking happy.
I would,
for a little bit. And then suddenly you'd be stressed with all the bills you
have. I'd probably click my heels in the air like a Toyota commercial.
Yeah.
But, you know, but here's the thing. But we're not getting tackled either. You're not at risk of getting your meniscus torn or getting a tibia a fracture that's so bad that you may not be able to play for the rest of your life. We're not – so we have to think of it like that. We can't think of it like fans. You got to put yourself in that position. And when you talk about a man talking about feeding his family long term, and he has a lot of kids. I get Le'Veon. Oh, he never heard of a condom.
Who's worse, him or Philip Rivers? Does Le'Veon have more than Philip Rivers?
How many does Philip have?
Nine.
Well, he's got the ninth coming.
Ninth coming. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. How many? Honorable mention. Yeah.
How many baby mamas?
The one.
Two?
One.
Just one?
Yeah, just one woman.
Okay, well, Rivers is ready aim fire. Like, he's a sniper. Le'Veon's got an AK-47. He's just like, yo.
Oh, that's good.
Like, if he's in the room, if he goes to the club, I leave because I don't want him to get me pregnant. He just sprays the walls.
It's fantastic to get you in here.
You see why I'll never host the Oscars?